Towards me. That way I knew. You good?
Oh, I'm
ready?
Good.
I think that's how we're going to have to start this. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Fantastic Neighborhood Podcast, episode 26. I'm your host, Fred, and we have a special guest with us today because John is doing military shit somewhere.
He's blowing up stuff with big guns.
Actually, I don't even... Are they
such.
Guns if they're arcing fire?
Cannons.
I think he's closer to a cannoneer.
His rate of fire is only
Johnny Bombardier Anderson is off shooting off mortars in camp something or other. So yay, no John.
Also, so apparently pooping in holes.
Yes, and shitting in holes, as he sent me a text message saying this morning. So the good news is that because John is not on this episode, there's just going to be a shit ton of Japanese ska in the in between the segments. Because I know he'll love that. So we'll be right back. Consumption Junction. And we're back. Ed, I see you're texting.
Yes.
Is that an important text?
Yes, it's Gen Con related.
So. Well, we're going to get to that in a little bit. But first, we gotta do the paperwork first. So welcome to Consumption Junction, people. I'm going to go quick because I got two things and I got to talk about them. So last episode I started talking about I'm playing Deus Ex Human Revolution because I got it on the Steam sale for I think it was $7.50.
I'm very jealous.
It is one of my favorite games ever now. And my love for this game has actually increased. I didn't get to play it as much as I would have liked this week, and longing does make the heart grow fonder. Mm-hmm. So when I did get to, I played the shit out of it when I could. But what I realized is that between last week and now, all I did were side quests.
That's awesome.
I have nothing of the story to actually tell you. Like, there's more setting stuff and there's more, emotional stuff
fluff,
to it. But yeah,
so to speak.
But I want to do all the side quests. So, I mean, that's literally all I did doing. And what was funny is, so this game takes place in Detroit, which is fitting for a dystopian future apocalypse. But I was playing this game, and then I went to bed, and I woke up the next day. It was like a Saturday. I flip on the TV, and Beverly Hills Cop was on.
Okay, I think you say RoboCop.
No, well, that could work too. But I was watching this, and then I was watching Beverly Hills Cop, and I was seeing similarities between the two. Like, you're his friend killed, and he's got to solve this mystery, and
he's
basically the same plot.
Stick a banana in a tailpipe.
Basically, what I'm saying is that Square Eidos ripped off Axel Foley for the plot of this game.
Well, if you're going to rip something off, Axel Foley's definitely the way to go.
Yeah. So
Judge Reinhold.
That was really the only game I played other than our game club game this week, but this episode is a little bit special because we are going to Gen Con this weekend.
Woohoo!
Which we're super excited about. We missed it last year, and that was the first year, I think, in 10 years that we didn't go.
For those of you out there, Gen Con is a gaming convention. It's the biggest one in America. And by gaming, I mean gaming as a whole, not just video gaming. There's some video gaming there, but it's mainly tabletop. Card games and board games and miniature games and dice games and role-playing games.
It's in the world of collectibles for the most part at this point. So we're gonna have a whole section of the show a little bit later dedicated to Gen Con and why it's important not only for tabletop gamers, but why it's important for video gamers and why the industry should take notice. But in honor of that, we kind of want to talk about some of our non-electronic gaming that we've been consuming this week.
What?
I know. So I have one that's a little bit shameful because it's a game designed for children. But one of the games you and I used to play a couple of years back was this game Duel Masters, which came from Wizards of the Coast, and it was sort of a more streamlined version of Magic the Gathering.
Some would say dumbed down, but it was different.
It had
differences.
Some things you could see came directly out of Magic. Some things you can see were evolutions thereof.
Obviously, stuff was straight from Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, the game was designed to compete with sort of like the Pokemon Yu-Gi-Oh crowd of gamers. But we kind of fell in love with the game because the art style was great.
It's still one of the best art-based games in, like, you know, ever.
And the gameplay itself is super solid. So the game died out a couple of years ago, and it mostly died out because the company publishing it, Wizards of the Coast, really didn't know how to market it and didn't know how to make it appeal to the proper gamers. Like, they were really trying to sell it as not only as a competitor, but as a parody of Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon.
You could definitely tell because, it came at a time where cartoons were the main driving force for children's card games. And the cartoon for this game, all right, if anybody's familiar with Deadpool,
right,
it broke the fourth wall all the time. The characters in that cartoon would speak directly to you and, you know, give like a nudge-nudge, wink-wink type joke. And I don't think kids in America were ready for that.
I don't think adults in America wanted to admit it either.
Exactly.
So it died out, and it had something like 8 or 9 sets in the States.
Yeah.
It was a good game, and we were invested into it. And now, so it got rebranded and re-released as Kaijudo, which also has a cartoon show, but the cartoon show isn't really a direct parody. It takes itself more seriously.
Okay. That's probably smarter.
I've only seen like half an episode just because I was curious. Because we have a mutual friend who's actually worked on the game.
Hada.
But yeah, so I actually picked up a couple of packs just to see what it was like, and it's the exact same game.
Yeah, I saw that some of the art. It's literally just copy-pasted art.
Yeah, a lot of the art is lifted. There's some new stuff.
It's not that bad, though, because the art was so good. It still stands up to the stuff coming out today.
Yeah, yeah. And, while I do kind of feel a little bit like a pedophile actually playing a children's game, it really is a solid game, and I actually think it's the kind of game where, like, I would like to build 2 decks for it to have in the house. So when, like, my wife's niece or nephew come over, like, I have a thing that we can do with them as opposed to, like, trying to pull out a Monopoly set or something like that. Because the game is super simple to the point where they can learn it, but it's strategic enough that they can enjoy it.
That's definitely an excuse to buy more, Fred.
It is. But with this, they're actually doing, like, prefab decks as well, which they weren't doing with the original game. Which makes it a lot easier. So you could just spend like $20.
Now, my one gripe of it has nothing to do with the gameplay, has nothing to do with the cartoon, but I've seen some of the promo cards and some of the like more, you know, rarer cards like mythics or whatever they're calling them. And the foil work on them is so drastic that, I mean, I picked one up and looked at it and I had a slight seizure looking at it. I didn't know what I was looking at.
Do you know what it looks like? Do you remember in the supermarket they used to have those machines where you put the quarter in, like it was a laundromat machine, and you'd shove the quarter in, and then
the card would come out. Prism stickers.
And it was like a prism sticker.
Yes, that's pretty much what it is.
It was a Ninja Turtles one, and then you'd always get like the foot soldier.
Yeah.
It's just a highly holographic thing with like a painted on character
like,
on the top.
Seriously, like you can get a sunburn if you hold it the wrong way.
Well, that's Wizard's ultimate evil plan.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I goofed around with that. I'm not going to really buy more, although I am going to be on the lookout for promos at Gen Con this year.
Because
I suspect that the game may take off in small circles. It'll never be Magic, but now that Wizards knows what the fuck they're doing and they're getting it into big box retail stores.
My only thing is there's another card game that's highly popular right now, and it's called Vanguard, and it's the same audience. That's the only thing. And
does Vanguard have a cartoon?
I don't know. It looks like it. If it doesn't already have a cartoon, it probably will, because it's just all the art looks like a cartoon.
Right.
It's like Yu-Gi-Oh! For the most part.
It's traditional Japanese anime style.
Yeah. And
I don't know why I said Japanese there. Like, if I just said anime, everyone would get it.
Japanime, like we used to say in the
90s.
And so they already have an uphill battle ahead of them.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Vanguard already has like one base set that's already deep-seated. It's already well established. There's tons of people have decks. Stores already have like stuff in the showcases of Vanguard, and now they have Kaijudo, and which is essentially the old Duel Masters, and there's not too much room for these kind
of
games.
Yeah, I know. I mean, time will tell.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, like, how big does a game need to be? Like, what kind of critical mass does it need to have to actually sustain it? Could it be a smaller game that has a devoted audience that maintains itself? Or does it need to hit that we're in every store ever level to be successful? Especially when it's being run by a large company like Wizards as opposed to a small outfit.
Well, okay, Pokemon... while it was insanely popular when it came out, now has just a very small but very loyal player base. So, I mean, it could get to that level where it's not gangbusters like Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic, but it could be popular enough to sustain itself just on a specific player base.
Sure. So, enough children's game. Ed, you played a couple of, I don't want to call them board games because that's sort of like a misnomer.
Well, tabletop games.
Tabletop.
Non-collectible tabletop games.
So tell me what you did.
Okay. Did a gaming night with a couple friends at one of my friends' places. And somebody brought over a small box. It was pretty cool looking. It was a tin and lots of, funky characters on it. It was called Quarriors. Now, before this year, I had never played a deck building game, which is just a type of tabletop.
They're relatively new, or at least standardized new now,
yeah.
Right?
The one that I played at PAX heavily, and then a buddy of mine picked it up, was Puzzle Strike, which was essentially, what was that, Street Fighter one? Puzzle Fighter. It's essentially a tabletop version of Puzzle Fighter, so
played that at your at your party a couple weeks back, and
yes.
I had a lot of fun with it, even though it was like a very brief tutorial and with the worst teacher in the world.
Yeah, well, but you got the gist of it, and once you played a couple characters,
you can see where the fun is in that game.
You can totally see how this game can be super fun. It's exactly like that, except instead of chips like they used in Puzzle Fighter or Puzzle Strike, this game is called Quarriors, and it uses dice. And instead of building a deck, you had a pool of dice. And every time your turn came around, you roll a set of dice. And depending on what you got on those dice, you would do combat with your opponents, or you could just buy other dice and get rid of other dice. And
so it's like a progressive building game, right?
Yeah,
like,
but that's what all those games are like. It's progressive.
Okay, sure.
So you're building your pool of dice. You're tailoring it to work a certain way. And there's a bit of luck involved because it's a dice game. And I liked it so much. And the one game, then again, I won the game that I played. So
that always makes it that much sweeter.
It
right?
does make it that much sweeter. And I'm seriously like, if when I go to Gen Con, I'm probably going to buy every expansion and the base set.
I wonder if they have promos for do dice games do promos? Like how complicated are the dice? Like, do you have to memorize a lot of symbols or
no? Well, in this specific game, each die. They had a card, so every time you bought a die, based on whatever you rolled, every time you bought a die, it told you the card that was always out just told you what the die does.
Sure. So it's not like you're buying a die that has like the universal attack symbol or the universal defense symbol.
Yeah, you can't do promos for this. I mean, it would have to be a set of dice with a card, and then
right.
It would be kind of clunky. I think you could do it in Puzzle Strike maybe, but
I could imagine them doing maybe a smaller limited release expansion or something like that, but
that would be rough because I think that this is one of those games that you could actually have a tournament system.
How many I mean that thing is filled with fucking dice, isn't it?
They're not super tiny dice, but they are smaller than normal dice, and it's not crazy. And there's a limited pool for all the players,
right?
So I mean, there's only five or six dice of a certain type depending on how powerful it is, and the more powerful ones will be more popular. So as you play, the dice are going to go away. So,
right.
I mean, you don't need unlimited amounts of dice.
How many people do you think is like a good game of that?
Well, the max is four currently. Based on the set that I played, it was just the base set. There was no expansions, and it was up to four. I wouldn't play with less than four.
Seems to be just like the golden number there.
Puzzle Strike. I played a lot of one on one, and that was fun. But it did get more fun with like most of these tabletop games. The more players, the better.
Sure. And then So in keeping with Fantastic Neighborhood's Kickstarter craze, so we've talked about the Ouya. Now, the game we're about to talk about, I actually wrote an article a little while back about, not the game specifically, but sort of just like how Kickstarter was less of a platform for people to actually get funding for their game and more of a pre-sales mechanism.
That's definitely the vibe that's
Yeah, building. So you got your copy of Zombicide.
Okay, this is the second Kickstarter that I've kicked. I don't even know what the terminology is anymore.
Whatever.
The first one was also one that I did with Fred. It was for a movie. We have not received the
animation cell.
Whatever.
I follow them on Facebook, and they're literally doing like the backgrounds.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Right,
I'm not complaining. I'm like, it's a film. I'm sure there's lots.
It's a feature length movie.
But the second one was one that I did on my own. It's for a board game called Zombicide. If anybody's familiar with the Zombies tabletop tile-based game, it's much in the vein of that, but with, in my opinion, much better art. They're much bigger tiles. And unlike Zombies, this is totally cooperative. Whereas Zombies, everyone's kind of against each other.
Trying to screw each other.
Yeah. Everyone's cooperating in Zombicide. And the art style in this is very cool. It's somewhat comic booky, and most of the characters are based on movie or TV show characters.
It's like as with most things zombie, it's a parody.
Yeah,
like they're lampooning a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. The figures, it comes with a shit ton of figures.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend with non-commercially released board games. Maybe not mainstream is not the right word, but like it's not Monopoly, obviously.
No, definitely not.
But that just how many miniatures and dice and figures can you shove into the box?
Well,
because that's a pretty hefty box.
Yeah, it's a big box game. It's from it's put out by Cool Mini or Not, and right now Fred's not too into this particular game, but they're kickstarting another game, and it's already made just so much money. So it's only like a week in, and they've like doubled their funding for this.
I mean, this one made close to or over a million, right?
No, I think it made over 700,000.
Okay, well, I mean, but their original goal was like 95.
Yeah, their original goal was like 100,000, which funded the game. But they kept adding cool little things. Every time they went past their, you know, certain levels, they kept adding new things, so I donated at the $100 level, which got you double the amount, not double, an extra like 75 zombie figures and a couple extra characters, and I have other characters coming in still that just haven't been produced yet.
Well, the nice thing about the extra characters is the expandability lets you have more players at once, I imagine? Or is it just like
so far,
more
no.
variety?
No,
in
it's
replay.
More variety in the... okay, so you have your survivor characters, which are your, you know, regular human guys that, you know,
those are your players.
They get different weapons as they go. Yeah, it's the players. It's the your guys that you're trying to keep alive and kill
avatars.
As many zombies. Exactly. So depending on how many people are playing, you get X amount of survivors, and each player gets their number. So it's completely mission based. You set up the city, the tiles in the exact way that the missions state, and there's set parameters on how to win, and everyone plays everyone's playing for the same goal. It's just everyone's just trying to survive the zombies, and you're trying to level up. That's another thing that's different about this from Zombies. There's a leveling system. You get from, depending on how many zombies you kill and how many mission objectives you get new abilities. And it's an extremely simple, seems like a very streamlined system of play that's purely strategic. And I really like that about this game.
Yeah, I mean, is it a dice game?
Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, there is probability in all
Yeah,
that
you need dice to hit you, to hit the zombies. The zombies have actions, and they automatically do things.
Gotcha.
Zombies don't roll against you. They just have X amount of actions. No matter what is what your players, you know, what the players are doing, the zombies, when it's their turn, will always do the same
sure.
turn.
So it's more risk than Stratego, basically. Like, there is a random factor to it.
Slightly, in the combat, yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, you can't control what another player's going to do. You can give advice and say, I think you should go here. And they could say, go screw, my guys are going to do this thing.
Which, those are the fun games.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm actually looking forward to trying this out with you and maybe a couple of our peeps one day.
Technically, this could be played solo. I mean, you could play this...
yeah, but I mean...
Oh, of course, I know. I know.
One step away from hermit status.
I know, but I'm saying that is the level of ingenuity built into the game. I mean, that it technically can't be played solo because the zombies will always do what they have to do. As long as you're not cheating yourself, you will have an experience. But two players can have a total blast playing this.
Sounds cool. So that's what we've consumed this week. We're gonna come right back with I'm renaming the next segment. We're gonna talk about it when we get there. Look okay. Forward to this name and enjoy some Japanese ska. Sound was that Ed? Is that Johnny Walker Blue?
Yes, this is Johnny Walker Blue Label.
Why? I have some Johnny Walker Blue right here.
Oh,
as
look
well.
At that! That's from my personal.
And when we
reserve.
Say look at that, we mean imagine it because you can't see us unless you're listening to the video feed. And by listening, I mean watching.
But just imagine yourself. What? You don't have to imagine.
It really is good.
It's fantastic. Is what it
so
is.
So we're back and we're renaming this segment. So you guys used to know this segment as Hype Bonanza, and then it became John's rename of Ugh. Hype Bonernanza, and John's not here, so now it is The Hype Train. That's so good. I'm going to edit in the sound effect right there. That's going to happen. My editing is going to be so fucking hard this week.
It's steam-powered.
Yes. Anyway, so I have a couple of things that I saw this weekend that really grabbed my attention. First and foremost, and this is almost like an advertisement for them, but there's a goddamn sale going on at Best Buy, which is actually pretty incredible. So most of these games that they're like, they've had a couple of summer sales, and I feel like this is a reaction to the Steam sale, but it's a physical, like you have to go into the Best Buy to get these things. They won't let you order them online.
Here's a quick question. Do people know how much Steam actually made that week?
I have no idea. I mean, it's got to be gobs of money, right?
I can't even. I would assume Best Buy saw those numbers and really wanted to jump in on that.
I think they're trying to cash in on that. So,
yeah.
But it seems like they're cashing in because they actually have some really decent titles for $10 and under.
Cool.
And they had one for $15, but I thought it was a good mention, is Driver San Francisco, which Anderson played on a couple episodes ago from the Steam sale, and he loved it.
That's
so
awesome.
For $15, it sounds, and you get the physical disc,
and you actually get the physical disc, right?
So some of the $10 games were, you know, for you couples out there, Just Dance 3, Kirby's Epic Yarn, Rayman Origins, Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition for the 3DS.
That's awesome.
Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker on PSP.
Wait a second, the Street Fighter was $10?
It's $10.
Oh, fuck, I'm going.
Crysis 2, Third Birthday on PSP. Dead Space 2 and Bulletstorm for $5.
That's awesome.
Now, the shitty part is you actually have to go to the store and hope they still have a copy because they're not selling them online.
Oh, yeah.
But for that price, it's not a bad idea to just walk into a Best Buy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would buy most of those titles just to have them and eventually get to them to add to the library.
Well, definitely the Super Street Fighter 4, I would get that for the 3DS.
Kirby's Epic Yarn was supposed to be really good. Rayman Origins is supposed to be really
good. I have a quick story about that. I bought that for my nieces for Christmas, and they returned it. I was so annoyed. It looked like such a cool game.
That's because it wasn't Nintendogs.
Oh, Jesus.
So, one of the things I'm actually really hyped about, I got a last-minute phone call from my brother-in-law yesterday at work. He goes, hey, Fred, I want to buy us tickets to this thing. Do you want to go to it? And I go, what is it? He goes, it's called The Legend of Zelda, The Symphony of the Goddess.
Goddesses.
Goddesses. And I stopped and bit my lip for a second, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I had to look it up. It is a full four-movement symphony of the music of Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
It's going to be at Madison Square Garden Theater.
I'm not a big Nintendo fan, but if somebody handed me a ticket to go to this, I would totally go.
But this is not, to me, this is not nerddom at all, right? Because the music for Legend of Zelda was always orchestral music, right? It was written by an orchestral composer.
Right, but, I don't think, some 75-year-old, the banker is going to go to this.
No, because, absolutely. Yeah. But, I think that this is going to do, if you did this with the Final Fantasy music as well, it would be same thing. We got tickets. They weren't cheap, but we got some tickets. So I'm going in, it's November something or other. I'm going to go to this and report back, but it sounds like a lot of fun. I've actually, as uncultured as I am, when I was in Prague, I went to a symphony. I don't know what defines symphony. We went to a symphonic production. Like there was a celloist and a violinist,
okay.
It was in the castle in Prague.
Well, any instrument played in a castle is automatically in symphony.
There was a lute, and we saw they did a performance of Vivaldi. This was on my honeymoon.
Yeah, that sounds like an orchestra,
right? Type. So this is an even bigger thing. It's a full orchestral pit. They have a big video screen that they're showing. God knows what.
I would imagine cutscenes.
It should be fun. I don't know if there are tickets available still, because apparently it's sold out everywhere it went so far.
This sounds like one of those things, the second the right message board catches it, it's sold out.
I think tickets literally went on sale yesterday when my brother-in-law bought them. So if they're sold out when you hear this and you're interested in going, I'm sorry. And then the thing that one of the things we've talked about being excited before on... So something we've talked about before on The Hype Train.
It's terrible.
It's the worst. Is Borderlands 2.
Okay.
We're all excited about this.
Yes. I played the shit out of that, of Borderlands 1, anyway.
Okay. So, the news we're talking about, though, is there was a recent faux pas by Randy Pitchford, the head of Gearbox Software. And what happened was there's a mode in the game, not even a mode, but there's a skill tree that you can decide to progress upon as one of the characters that he referred to in an interview as girlfriend mode.
Yeah, that's pretty, that's just silly.
It's just bad marketing, right? It's bad wording. So the idea of the mode, and here's the sad thing, is that the mode is really smart and the idea behind it is really progressive and smart thinking. It is a mode. It's
poorly named.
It is a skill tree for people who are not necessarily good at first-person shooters, but want to play the game and want to support their friends. So you get abilities healing abilities or ability, I would assume abilities that just sort of static buffs that help your friends while you're there or within proximity.
Okay.
If I'm within X amount of distance from my friends, they regenerate. Stuff like that.
Right.
It's passive bonuses. And then it also has bonuses that, help you, auto-aim and stuff like
Extra
that.
Extra drops.
Yeah. It's a pure support role. But... Which is a great idea for that game, because it gives even more variety.
It's a great idea for any game.
It's a great idea for a lot of games, yeah. But he called it girlfriend mode, and the internet jumped on him for being sexist. Obviously,
it's a poorly named and poorly timed thing. I mean, after all that Street Fighter stuff that happened not too long ago,
here's the dumb thing:
dumb.
He's getting criticized from a group of community that fully supports Dead or Alive, or
I don't know if they fully
Ivy's character in Soul Calibur.
Okay.
Or, the super sexualization and objectation of women, or objectation? Whatever. Words are hard. Right? The gaming, if you want to say gaming is sexist, I'll accept that. But this is the worst case, or the worst example of that I can think of, right? Because everyone here has referred to someone in the past as a gamer girl, or the girlfriend of a gamer, or you know what I mean? I personally, I hate it when even when women refer to themselves as game girls or game nerds, Because it's like, why do you have to separate yourself? Like, why do you have to differentiate yourself from the group? Just be one of us, right? Or be just be a person. Just do what
gamer.
You want to do.
I'm a gamer.
Don't even say gamer. You're a person who plays games. You don't have to, that doesn't have to be your label.
Okay. Is this official? I mean, is that like if you scroll down the menu, it says girlfriend mode?
Oh no, that's he was. I mean, he literally said it in passing. He was trying to come up. I guess he was trying to come up with a name for the skill tree itself, and he just called it that.
This sounds like a lot of knee jerk reactionary.
Yeah, it's hype bullshit.
Yeah,
hype bullshit on the hype train. Oh my god, he's gonna. If John listens to this episode,
he's not going to listen to it because he's not on it.
Oh my god, it's going to be so bad.
It's okay. The rest of the world will hear it, except for him.
You have anything you're hyped about, Ed, other than what we're going to talk about next?
I am hyped about what we're going to talk about next.
Well, in that case, I think we'll be right back with what we're going to talk about. That might have been the worst name segment we've ever had, and it's staying.
You mean best?
Best. Worst. Averagest? It's the most average. it's less average than others, but more average than
it's
other things.
The least sexual, at least according to the Johns, anyway.
So, Ed, we're getting to the meat of the show now. Ew. The juicy center.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Gen Con.
Okay.
So this is very close to my heart. Gen Con is a convention that we've been going to for, I want to say, 10, 11 years now.
Okay, I think this will be 11 or 12.
We missed last year. Both you and I couldn't go last year.
Yeah.
But we had done every other year since. I mean, I was in college the first year we went.
Yeah.
And that was easily 10 years ago.
It was absolutely over 10 years ago. Last year was the first year in over a decade that we didn't go, and it was that weekend was one of the hardest weekends of the year.
Oh my god,
it
was so painful to me, and I didn't go because I got married, and I had to have it was my anniversary. We had to go out and celebrate my first year anniversary, so we planned a cruise. And I just couldn't swing paying for both things.
Yeah, I believe I didn't go that year because
this year I was like, "Fuck that noise."
Yeah, I didn't go that year. I think I took several vacations that year, and I just couldn't swing it. It was too much work and not enough money.
Do you know what was so painful to me though is realizing that while I was sitting at work while Gen Con was happening, that I really could have just gone. I could have done it. I could have hitched a ride. I could have slipped over people's hotel room floors.
That was part of it for me. The worst was. Just every time I heard my phone make a noise, I knew it was Gen Con related and somebody either texting me a picture or texting me just some info. And I was just – it hurt so much. It hurt my soul.
I know.
I lost
really
religion.
Hard.
I then gained religion and then lost it again.
We made up a religion to lose. It was a religion about losing religion.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Why should our listeners care about Gen Con? I sort of had to think about this. Because, primarily we are a video game show. But I stopped and thought about it, and we're really not. We're a gaming show. All of us, we have proclivities of gamer, right? We are not strictly video game players. I play card games. Anderson plays board games. You play tabletop miniature games. We don't love video games because they're video games. We love games. And Gen Con has been around for tons of years, and I think it's probably the most important gaming convention available right now.
Well, it's definitely the biggest public gaming convention, period, in America.
Yeah.
Anyway,
based on attendance, I mean
there's roughly like 50,000 people.
I think it's
something.
More than that. I think it's definitely bigger than PAX Boston.
Well, yeah, but,
and it's bigger than I think it's bigger than PAX Prime. Whether it's bigger than E3, I don't know, but at the same time, E3 is not a great convention. And here's the thing: Gen Con is a B2C convention. It's a business to consumer convention.
Yeah.
And it's companies coming and selling their wares and promoting their games to the gaming public. It's not like...
That's the business end.
Right. It's not PAX, where PAX is fan-run and companies just happen to show up. You know what I mean? It's
The crux of Gen Con Indie is pretty much every world championship for every game that's played in America is at Gen Con Indie.
Yeah.
That's actually the crux of it.
Yeah, and you know, so any non-video game that is going to get premiered premieres at Gen Con Indie.
Yeah.
And we say Gen Con Indie, there is a European Gen Con as well, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is fun, but this is like the mothership convention for them. And, you know, so any world championship takes place at Gen Con. Any game premiere takes place at Gen Con. Any fucking rad promo you're going to get for a collectible game is at Gen Con.
Almost every Kickstarter game that you donated to releases at Gen Con.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I was thinking about this. You know, the lines between electronic gaming and standardized non-electronic gaming have become very blurred. Magic has Magic Online.
Absolutely.
You know, HeroClix has the HeroClix thing. You can play almost any Parker Brothers and Milton Bradley game on an online
version.
There
was even that miniature game that it kind of tanked, but there was a miniature game that you actually needed an iPad to play the game. There's lots of stuff. Yeah,
there was that Eye of Judgment game for the
Eye of Judgment,
PlayStation
right.
a little while ago. There's a lot of games that sort of do this conversion where they either there's an online version and a non-online version, or they are sort of one in the same.
Right.
And Gen Con is more and more becoming, as a matter of fact, like 2 or 3 years ago, Gen Con sort of officially added computer gaming to
I think it always had it in some level, but I think now, I think the last couple of years, they had they started having actual tournaments, like in some capacity. Like I think StarCraft was one of the first ones that they had.
Yeah, and they actually had floor space for presenters and booths to actually have video gaming. So you know it is relevant to gamers. Now the question becomes like, why is Gen Con so great? Like, why do we love Gen Con? And I did give this some thought, you know, and I think there's a couple of reasons. And I hate to say this, but one of them is because of Indianapolis.
Really?
Yeah. So Gen Con takes place in Indianapolis. And when Gen Con comes around, the entire city just becomes... It's not Indianapolis anymore.
It's Gen Con City. Yeah.
And it's because that town is so Midwestern and so blank slate.
Okay.
That there's no personality at all. So it just becomes Gen Con.
It definitely got a symbiotic relationship with whatever convention is there.
Or game.
Okay. So the bar that Fred and I I play a game called War Machine and Hordes to some extent. And Fred played it for a while.
I still have my stuff. I can pick it up tomorrow if I want to.
The one of the coolest bars at in the area is called the Ram, and Privateer Press.
Let's get it straight. It's a microbrewery. They do have the big still outside.
It's an awesome place. The people in there are all awesome. The food there is great. The drinks there are great. And Privateer Press always has like this cool vibe with all the beer names changed to match the War Machine setting. So
they
theme the whole place, and they sell merch. They sell cool like beer and like bar related t-shirts and
like limited edition for that year.
And that place is definitely the hub, like the center for Indianapolis and Gen Con converging. But all the restaurants and all the local businesses, they embrace.
They know that it's happening. Like if you have Comic-Con at the Javits Center, not only in New York, mind you, but like not only is there not anything near that area, like you couldn't walk, like if you walk to a restaurant with your cosplay outfit on or something, they're gonna look at you like a fucking asshole.
Well, I mean, it is New York. They're not gonna look at you totally like an asshole because they're kind of used to it, but they don't treat you any different. They don't say, oh hey, you're here for the con, that I know that, so let me talk to you about
have a battle axe burger,
exactly.
You know, like yeah.
Indie definitely it totally caters to Gen Con and its attendees, and it's totally cool.
Do you know what is actually a scary fact, though, is that I think second to the Indianapolis 500,
mm-hmm.
and on the occasion when they have the Super Bowl, it's like the biggest money-making event they have in Indianapolis.
That and the, I think it's the next week or 2 weeks after, they have the Star Trek convention, which is run by the same company.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it's a maybe per person or something like that. I don't think it's as big an ordeal.
It's pretty big. Yeah. But either way, it's definitely the biggest thing that that convention gets. At least I believe so.
I mean, it's so they have a relatively new convention center there. It used to be built as part of the sports stadium.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to Lucas Oil Field where the Colts play a couple blocks down.
They built the Lucas Oil Field for it. Yeah.
But the convention center itself is gigantic. I mean, I would say it's probably three or maybe even more times larger than the Javits Center.
I don't know about that big, but it's one huge central area for all the retailers and then lots of like little wings for the collectible card gaming tournaments area is huge. I mean, it's got lots of separate rooms for other games, whatever they've got to do.
There's private rooms. There's the main gaming hall. There's the main display hall.
On the second floor, there's a giant hall just for D&D.
Yeah, absolutely huge.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's...
And it's connected to all of the hotels that people would probably be staying at.
Several of them.
A lot of them.
There's a lot of hotels in that area.
When I say connected, by the way, I mean literally connected with walkways.
Yes, this is the other bit of Indianapolis Convention Center that's totally awesome, and I wish the Javits Center here in New York had it.
Those walkways would be like four city blocks long.
There's literally skywalks, like, you know, tunnels in the air, basically.
Magical kingdoms.
That connect the hotels and malls or whatever to the convention center. If you're in one of those connected hotels, you never have to see the outdoors.
No, you can walk from your hotel room to most of the other hotels, to the convention center.
To the mall
where there's food, to an above-ground atrium thing that they have.
It's part of the mall.
Part of the mall? Yeah. It's
No, it's part of a different mall, I think.
Yeah.
There's like another shopping
area. It's positively monolithic, like the way they have the... And it's because it's like a relatively new city.
Well, it's fairly uninhabited.
Yeah, the city has almost no residential.
Yeah.
One of the comments we always said about it, there's no life in Indianapolis, right? Yeah. You won't see a dog, you won't see a bird.
No.
As a result, it's actually a pretty clean city.
Yeah.
And the weather there is always, like, temperate. The weather report says the weather today is Indianapolis.
Dry. Yeah, it's just dry. No, the city center is actually really cool looking, though. Like, it's got, like, a big statue with a fountain, and
I mean,
that's nice.
There's definitely stuff there if you want to explore it, but it doesn't really relate to us playing games, right? So, some of the other things that I was thinking about, like, why do I love Gen Con so much? What is so great about it? And what does it do better than PAX? Right? So, I think a big thing is that the way they have the tournament structured and the way they actually run tournaments there, the way they do pickup games, the way people can play is so much more
structured.
It's structured and it's free-flowing at the same time. Like, if I want to go there and play Magic, at any given hour of the day, I can either find free play or I can sign up for a draft and wait for eight people and just do a draft, right? Or even, you know, wait for 18 people or eight people to do a eight-man bracket standard tournament or whatever have you.
Right.
Right? They have – Gen Con is a 24-hour convention. For 4 days straight.
Even outside of Gen Con, if you go to any of the hotels and go to the common areas, there are people there 24/7.
Sitting down, playing games that they just bought.
Not even just playing games. They'll just set up a game and just sit there. Someone will sit down and play with them.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually very communal. People are fairly friendly.
Very friendly.
Yeah, I mean, because they just want to play games.
I mean, half of them are drunk anyway, so...
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, the other side of that coin, unfortunately, is that Indianapolis, being a Midwestern town and being a convention-based city, after midnight, really the only game in town is Steak and Shake if you're hungry.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is unfortunate.
Especially, I mean, we're from New York, so we know what good food tastes like, and Steak and Shake is not that.
Yeah, so if you ever wind up going to Gen Con, remember to eat before midnight.
Yeah, don't eat Steak and Shake. I mean, there's no exaggeration to what I'm saying. I had a friend come to Gen Con. Day one, he had Steak and Shake. Day two, he left. He flew back home and went to the hospital. That's how bad he got sick.
That is pretty bad. I mean, we've gotten sick at Gen Con, but we've actually pressed through.
Yeah.
And, like, we really... After Gen Con, you kind of need a vacation.
Yeah. That Monday, that first Monday that you get when you get back, it's...
That's... Oh, I fucking took off work for that, dude. Oh, I'm not... Shit. There's no way.
Yeah, not an option for me, but oh well.
And so, in addition to tournament play, the thing that we love about Gen Con, and it really applies mostly to collectible games more so than anything else, but motherfucking promos.
Dude, okay. Fred and I discovered year two, not so much year one.
Well, year one we went for one day.
Yeah.
And it was, I had a fucking mission which I accomplished, and that was that.
But that first year was just the taste, and we didn't really do the whole Gen Con experience.
Right, and now we're hooked on heroin.
So the year after that, we realized, hey, all of these companies have cool, not all, but many of these companies have cool promo things. Let's get some free stuff. Cool.
Right, and these are promos to, you know, obviously promote their game. Have this exclusive figure. Please buy the full game and play with it.
And then we would get back from the con and, you know, just have this suitcase sitting in our... Well, in my case, I had it sitting in my room when I had a room.
Right. And without exaggeration, when we say suitcase full of, I mean, we've had years where we've come back with boxes of promos.
Yeah, I mean, there was one year that I had stuff... We had stuff shipped to us.
Yes.
From Gen Con that, like, we just couldn't get it into the airplane. It was just too much shit. Anyway, so we would open up these suitcases, at least that first year that we realized, and look at all this stuff and like, I'm not going to play this game. Or I am going to play this game and this is cool. Right. Or we're not going to play this game, so let's, you know, whatever. It sits around. And a lot of these promos are worth a shit ton of money.
So there have been several Gen Cons now where you and I have actually financed our trip.
For the next year, yeah.
For the next year, selling the promos that we have gotten.
From the year before.
you know, and the comparable to this for something like PAX or for E3 is the, you know, the download codes.
Yeah,
for definitely. The electronic. I mean, we walked out of PAX with a lot of those, but they don't seem to have sort of the grip on people that these promos for these right. other games do. Because a lot of time these promos are actual tournament caliber cards or right. pieces. Or just awesome.
Well, in video games, it's usually like a cosmetic piece, which is cool and
right.
which usually goes for some money. But if you're getting a piece you could only get at a convention that happens once a year, and that's it, and then the secondary market, if this is a real secondary market for this game and you have this piece, it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, and you will absolutely finance your con. I specifically remember a couple of years. So the first year we went, I was actually playing a game called Warcry, and I won the world championship.
Yeah, Warhammer card game.
Yes, and I made, it's measured in the thousands, the amount of dollars I made off of
Yeah,
the
but
prize.
This isn't, okay, what he won, though, is a huge prize. This was the world championship for this game, and he had to win it. So, I mean, that is...
I earned that shit.
Yeah. No, you absolutely earned it, but I'm saying this is... What I was mentioning before was stuff you could walk around the convention center and say, hey, can right. I have that
So
thing?
We got the... Wizards was giving away the Sir Hawthorne figure.
Oh, right. I forgot the name
Sir
of it.
Sir Hawthorne.
Okay, and so Heroescape.
Heroescape.
For the miniature game, tabletop miniature game,
The year it came out, actually, was the year they gave that promo
yes.
out.
There was a figure called Sir Hawthorne. He was a black knight, and he was super powerful. The only way you could get it was to get your badge punched at the Wizards of the Coast booth, and they would hand you one of these figures.
Yes, and I mean, the badge punching thing is just, you know, the you've gotten it, you get yeah. one, right? Now, when we first saw this figure and we were on our promo hunt, we didn't realize that. And they just sort of had the ticket splayed out on a table. Yeah, and usually when you see something splayed out on a table,
just
it means
take it,
right? So me and Ed both wound up taking like two or three of the
figures. I got two. I think you got three.
Yeah. And, you know, we sort of threw them in a drawer and forgot about them.
Yeah, mine was just in my bag. I think one of the cards got all bent up or whatever. But,
yeah. So fast forward to like maybe a year later. Or maybe two, I don't know.
Yeah, 1 year later, I go on eBay, I start just randomly looking at stuff, and I see Sir Hawthorne promo, Gen Con, whatever. I go on eBay, so looking down the list, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this thing is selling for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, I think they must have minted maybe a few thousand, and those were gone in a heartbeat.
It was a it was a game that sold at Toys R Us. Tons of people played it. It had a tournament scene. So
it was a decent game.
It was a fun game. It was a cool game. There was a lot of setup involved, but it was a fun game. But there was a tournament scene involved, which means there was other prizes to be won for whatever their tournament system was. So this figure, they could only get from Gen Con, and it was extremely tournament viable. The collectors went bonkers for it. So yeah. I remember the next year, the year after we got the figure.
Those figures were on lockdown.
I sold my figure for over $200. I think it was $270 or $80 I sold it for, which paid for my flight.
Yeah.
To and from Gen Con.
By the way, the variance on the cost of flights, looking at like the years and the past, it's like so varied.
I know.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, you can totally go to this con. I mean, and that has no promo hunting is one of the many things you can do at a con.
It's one of the things to look forward to, but it's not the con.
If you play any of the game, realistically, if you want to go there and learn a new game, pick up some interesting new board games or card games, that is the place to go because they are going to demo them to you. They are going to show you how to play. You're going to get probably a good price on them. And, you know, there's lots of cool t-shirts and there's lots of cool, you know, memorabilia and cool things to participate in. They do the live dungeon every year, which we still have yet to do.
Almost every major company, like WotC and all of them, they have some sort of raffle thing. So you just walk up, you play in some demo, you get like a raffle ticket, and who knows, you could win whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of the games that you're going to be demoing are for games that won't be out for like 6 months, and you could buy it right there.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
It's very cool. And, you know, there's, I mean, it really, it's, as an, if you are not into tabletop gaming, you can walk into Gen Con and just have a blast. Like, you could, if you just want to be able to sit down and demo some games and have some fun, like, you will have 4 days of great stuff ahead of you. And that is the other thing about Gen Con that I fucking love. It's 4 goddamn days.
That's 4 days of the, just the retailer side. Just a regular guy going in. I mean,
There's a Wednesday press day sort
of
thing.
There's a Wednesday like press day if you're one of the companies that are featuring products there, or somebody who's working for them, or a friend of them. You can go in and just go, you know, see everything, see all the sites before everyone else.
Yeah, and you know, I've said this about PAX Boston before. Like, I feel like 3 days is not enough for what they're trying to do.
Definitely not.
And that might be a restriction of where they are and what they're trying to do.
I view PAX as a it's pretty much the exact same thing as Gen Con, except flipped, where video games are definitely the focus with tabletop gaming as the side stuff.
Sure.
Gen Con is the opposite of that. But
I think that the, you know, PAX can definitely learn something. Gen Con has been in business
for a
while.
Gen Con has
the
pedigree. It's
I mean, they've been going, I mean, before they were in Indianapolis, they were much small. I mean, Gen Con started as like a convention in some guy's like church basement.
Wasn't it in like Chicago or something?
I think it was Wisconsin.
Something like that.
And it's sort of, I think it's like year 40 or something for them.
Nah, I don't think it was that long, but it's been going on
for a while, and it's a ton of fun. Obviously, it's too late to go this year if you're listening to this, but you know
why?
If you're in the Indianapolis area,
even if you go in just for like Saturday and Sunday,
yeah,
you will have an amazing time.
It's an amazing time and it's amazing fun, and we definitely recommend it. And check it out, because if you do conventions at all, video gaming or not, you definitely will take away something from this. Anyway, so we've gone on about Gen Con enough to the point where now I'm literally giddy with
joy.
I'm actually I wasn't as excited about it the past couple of days as Gen Con's in the past, because Gen Con's in the past, I've been like
we both missed a year,
like chomping at the bit, like, oh my god, Gen Con! It's like the first time you go to a concert, you know what I mean? But this year, I'm an adult now.
There's a whole different energy this year.
Yeah, but it's going to be great. And we're looking forward to it. And we're going to be right back with Game Club, I think. Right, Eddie?
Sure.
Do you have something to say, Eddie?
I was going to say, I can't wait to see all the friends I missed last year.
Yeah.
That I didn't see. I haven't seen for 2 years now.
Fucking Seth, dude. We haven't seen Seth in forever.
Dude, I technically haven't seen Omar, and he lives like 4 blocks from me. I'm going to see him for the first time at Gen Con.
Oh, man. We'll be right back with Game Club. Ed, it's time for Game Club.
It is.
Game Club. So this week's Game Club was Bastion, and for those new listeners, if you haven't played Bastion yet and you don't want spoilers, don't listen to this segment. There will be show notes with timestamps.
Oh, so I shouldn't listen?
You shouldn't listen. So, Ed, you didn't actually play Bastion because we didn't know that you were going to be on the show till later on. So I'll excuse you, but I kind of want to talk about this game at length.
Go for it.
So Bastion can be talked about on two levels. One is the gameplay of the game, and one is the artistry, right? Let's talk about the gameplay, because that's the easier part of this.
Okay.
Bastion is a 3/4 top-down action-adventure. Yeah. I want to say RPG, but the RPG elements of the game are so very light, right? Okay. It's you collect some items, you get different weapons. You know, that's really it. Yeah, you know, there's no stat management or anything like that. So it's pretty digestible and it's pretty straightforward. And it's something, you know, that anyone can sort of play and enjoy. And, you know, the variety of weapons that you get and the roles that they fill and, you know, picking the right weapon for the right level, like, it adds a depth to the gameplay. There isn't necessarily a right choice, but some of them may suit your playstyle more, or some of them may be better for the level. It all depends on sort of what your gaming habits
fairly
are.
Fairly deep.
Yeah, I would say that it's deep enough to play through again.
Okay. That's always good.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to necessarily uncover things. Like, it doesn't seem to be the kind of game where you would, like, I'm going to play through it again because I did this way instead of that way. I don't think it's that kind of game. I think it's fairly linear in its progression, but
you could do things in different play styles, maybe?
Yeah, like, you can run through the game with the hammer, or you can run through the game with the machete. Like, right now, I'm sort of favoring the machete and the repeater for my gun.
Right, I was about to say, like, more shooty than...
Yeah, I'm more melee. Shooty, and I'm fast melee, but you can go sort of, like, brute strength melee and, you know, archery, or you can go, like, a cannon style. Right. You know, there's a lot of different variety, and then each weapon has a couple of special moves associated with it that you can try out. So there is some depth to the gameplay. And mechanically, the game is a lot of fun, and it sort of harkens back to a lot of the older action RPG games. Like, I started thinking about, there was this game on Sega called Landstalker that I used to really love, okay. And this reminds me of it a little bit. It's not as much RPG as Landstalker was, not nearly as much, but it definitely hits the right notes, and it sort of reminded me of that. It
definitely looked cool. I couldn't get the video on my PS3, because apparently it's not on PSN, but... Is this the game that kind of looked like Dofus?
It had
a bit of a Dofus vibe.
Yes, it has like a bit of a watercolor vibe to it. Very, okay. Very bright. It's bright drab is how I would describe
it. Right. No, I know what you're saying.
So, gameplay, there's not a whole lot to talk about, right? Because it doesn't really stray from the pretty standard fare.
Mm-hmm.
But the artistry of the game is really what sells it.
I remember also, the narration
right.
I heard is excellent.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about it. So the game really what sells the game is the narration. So there is a narrator who basically transcribes the story or your actions as you play, and it's really like trying to describe how well it's done is sort of a disservice to it unless you've actually played the game. Because you kind of have to experience it to understand. The game is sort of like a weird fantasy western setting.
Yeah.
And the narrator sounds like Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
And he uses...
When I heard it, I was like, yeah, I could listen to this all day.
Yeah, he uses sort of the parlance of western, right? You know, it's very sort of, you know, and then the kid knew... By the way, your character's called The Kid.
Of course.
Kid didn't want none of that. You know, like, sort of like, yeah. It's very matter of fact. It's very, there's a lot of metaphor. There's a lot of very sort of like, it's sort of dreary, but in a cheerful way. I don't know if that makes sense.
It's giving me a Rango vibe.
Yeah, I would almost say like Rango is actually a good parallel to this.
Yeah.
Not as comical.
No,
but,
not as comical, but, you know, it's a gameplay experience and it's action-based, but... Rango definitely gives me... Every vibe that you just mentioned was definitely Rango.
So one of the things that the game does, and the game has a lot of little facets to it that sort of make it great. Like, there's an achievement system within the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's training levels that you can try, which I actually found to be more fun than the full levels themselves.
Okay.
Like, so for each weapon, there's a training level where you have to hit three levels of difficulty to unlock items in the game. Okay. And like, so for instance, if you have the bow and arrow, the mission is to try to hit X amount of targets with X amount of shots and under.
Okay.
Right, so it depends where you line up and how accurate you shoot, stuff like that. With the hammer, it's about how many items you can smash fast enough, right? Mm-hmm. They're mini games, but they don't break the mold of the gameplay itself. Like, okay. they're not mini games in the sense of Final Fantasy VII had a snowboarding level.
Okay.
They're mini games in the sense of they're within the game engine.
Right.
And they add a lot of fun to the game. But in addition to that, you know, the gameplay itself is so solid, and the world has this... Basically, you are a character, the kid, who wakes up one day and the world has experienced this thing called the Calamity.
Okay.
Where, like, everyone is dead or turned to dust, and the world has shattered. And when they say shattered, they take a very literal sense to it.
Like, it's in pieces.
You are on fallen land masses that are floating in the sky, and as you walk through them, pieces will fly up from the ground and fill in the level so you can see them. And it's quite interesting. Like, there's no map system to the game, and I don't think a game has ever quite done... Do you know, like, some games have sort of like a fog of war system where as you move through levels, you uncover this? This is a literal fog of war. So, like, you can't see what's ahead of you until you move there, and the pieces literally fill in as you're going ahead. Okay. It's a very unique art style, and it's very interesting. But the narration is really the key to the game. And the narration is so smart that... It knows, like, they planned for certain occurrences. Like, I know you've played video games before where you've seen something and you've gone, like, I kind of want to smash that, you know? Like, so it takes that into account. And, like, let's just say it's, like, a random, like, it's a statue that you could obviously smash.
Okay.
If you don't smash it, it says, like, the kid walked away knowing he could have smashed that. And if you do smash it, it says something else.
Yeah.
And there's just, I mean, I can't, the studio time they must have spent voice acting this was
astronomical.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, because there's a lot of ifs or ands that they had to account for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's beautifully done. The game is, I mean, I think it's polygonal, like it's polygon based, but you don't really know. It's pseudo cell shaded.
Mm-hmm.
And it has it is a bit super deformed, but it doesn't.
Also, because of the setting, it kind of reminds me of The Stand.
It's,
no, not The Stand. I'm sorry. Dark Tower.
Dark Tower. It's like if Dark Tower were super cheery.
Yeah.
You know, so I haven't beaten the game yet. I played it for a good couple of hours. I didn't think I would actually beat it on top of everything I had to do in this week because of Gen Con. But I do plan on playing through the thing. I've actually... So I'm playing this on Steam. It's available on Xbox 360 as well. Apparently not on PlayStation. Go fig. On Steam, I played it, and I'm playing it with the Xbox 360 gamepad.
Okay.
I cannot imagine playing this with anything else.
Okay.
Right? It's really a gamepad game.
Okay.
So I'm playing it on my home computer, and I'm also playing it on my new $300 laptop. And to be honest, it runs identically on both.
Cool.
And it's really a clean experience. There's no lag. There's no jitter. There's no vertical problems. There's no need to go into the settings and fuck with anything. It's a really cleanly executed, beautiful game. It has an interesting story for the parts that I've actually seen so far. It seems to have a pretty decent depth of gameplay. Like, you know, I've been playing at length now for quite a while. I think I have like 4 or 5 hours in it, and there still seems to be more to it.
Cool.
So it's,
I'm sure there's tons of hidden stuff that you haven't.
Yeah, I don't know how deep it goes, to be honest. I haven't read a spoiler or anything for it.
I would just go through the game and do everything I didn't do just to hear the narration for it.
Yeah, there's a lot of narration moments. Oh, and you know, the thing I have to talk about is the soundtrack. The soundtrack is absolutely incredible. We're going to play one of the cuts during the cross sections here in the show. Yeah. But it's got like this It's almost as if you mixed Western-style music with Far Eastern music.
Yeah.
It's very hard to explain, but it's very befitting.
That's definitely,
of what you're playing.
That's yet another element of Dark Tower. That,
yeah,
yeah.
You really have to experience the game to understand what I'm talking about. I didn't quite know what this game was going to be until I played it, and I feel like the same could be said for anyone who hasn't. But yeah, I mean, this game gets total thumbs up. We're not going to do it next week, obviously, because I'm not playing. I got fucking Gen. Fuck you. I'm playing Gen Con. But do try to finish it if you haven't yet. It's totally worth the time you've put into it. And I think, Ed, you should definitely give it a shot.
It totally looks like it's something that would be down my alley.
Yeah, and I mean, this thing will run on any computer, so.
I just haven't played video games in ages, to be honest. So.
Why are you on the show?
I don't know.
So we'll be back with the outro. We're recording. Talk about what you want. Hi, we're back.
Oh, we're talking about what we want.
So, Ed, what do you want to talk about? You had a thing.
My good friend, Texas, Miss Texas, it's something I'm going to be bringing to the future, to future episodes. She's going to be opening up a salon here in Brooklyn, and she has a Kickstarter to help her move forward with it.
And now, I should stop you and mention that before we actually recorded the show, I watched Ed get a haircut. Yes. In his apartment.
Yes. I'm a fancy man.
There was actually a butler while he was getting it.
She's a very good friend of mine. And she's going to be opening a salon here in Brooklyn. And it's going to be very gamer-friendly and very nerd-friendly. And it's going to be very cool.
Sort of like a punk rock salon,
yes,
sort of thing.
Yes, it's definitely going to be very punk rock. And I'm going to be promoting her Kickstarter on our, I guess, podcast. Thoroughly.
Look how possessive you have become. Three episodes, it goes right to your head.
Well, it's more the alcohol, but yeah. And the fact that John doesn't listen to my episodes.
Yes.
But I'm going to be... look for Salon Brooklyn. Pretty much you can spell Brooklyn any way possible. And she has the web zone for it.
We'll put a link in the show notes as well.
Once there is a link to be had, it'll be... everywhere.
I expect everyone to get a super awesome punk rock haircut there.
Oh, yeah.
So, Game Club next week, we got a best of episode, people. You're going to like it.
Oh, dude, it sounds dope.
It does. You're on it.
Oh, well,
that makes
four
episodes.
Excellent.
So, we're calling gameplay free play until me and John get back, and then we can fucking figure it out. So, try something new. Maybe play something that's non-conventional, not a video game. Branch out a little bit. Try something that you... been wanting to try but just haven't. Grow some fucking balls, you cowards.
Go to
maybe I shouldn't address our fans like that, our listeners.
Hey, idiots, do the thing. No.
Listen up, stupid.
No, go to like a gaming store that you normally wouldn't go into and just pick up some random card game for like $10.
Yeah, get the starter kit and just go, you know, or ask them to give you a demo.
Yeah, just whatever game they have that they haven't sold yet, pick up and see if you like it.
Yeah.
A board game, whatever.
And, guys, if you haven't yet, and I know we mentioned this on the last show, and I'm going to mention it again, me and John have a very special Tribute to Dreamcast episode coming up.
I can't wait for that.
I'm very excited about it. If you would like to participate in this episode, you can leave us a message, and we'll play it on our show.
What was the Panzer Dragoon game for it?
I don't know. That was Saturn.
Oh, Saturn,
yeah. But if you would like to leave us a message for that show, or for any other episode that we do, we will gladly... listen to it and play it and do some funny stuff with it. So call us at 720-HOODIE-6 and you can leave us a message and say whatever the fuck you want.
What number was that, Fred?
Why, that's 720-HOODIE-6. And you can always email us at letters@fantasticneighborhood.com to reach out to me, John, or even Ed. We will forward your emails on to this son of a bitch.
God.
can you imagine the amount of spam I'm going to send you
now? Oh, my God.
Now?
Just be hate mail and, like, get that voice off the air.
You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/Fantastic Neighborhood. You can find us on Twitter at Fantastic Hood. You can find me on Twitter at... oh, God, I forgot my Twitter handle. That's how much I use it. You can find me at Proto Addict. And you can find the show at Fantastic Hood. And, you know, come on, guys. Rate us on iTunes. What are you waiting for?
Do it.
Do it. And, you know, next week we have a special episode coming up. It's our best of. So, you know, me and John and Ed will all be accounted for. And then the week after, you can look forward to maybe I'll have recovered from Gen Con by then. Maybe.
I doubt it.
That's not at all a promise nor a guarantee of service. I don't want to get sued.
I'm going to sue you.
Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Say goodnight, Ed.
Good night, Ed.
Heavy drop. Ed, I don't know about you, but I think Dane Cook is one of the voices of our generation. I'm trying. I'm testing. This is called levels.
I haven't seen Omar in like 2 years.
No, I haven't seen him since Gen Con we went to.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, we didn't yell on this episode!
Why haven't we yelled yet?